You know that's my favorite song by the Pet Shop Boys, Left to My Own Devices. And welcome to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only local queer radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you very much for listening. And before we go further, I'd like to say the opinions expressed here are only those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WRFG as a whole, or its board, its staff, its volunteers, its members, its funders, or even you, the listeners. I think I didn't leave anybody out. Okay. So the point is that the opinions that I express here are only my own and my guests. So we have a very interesting show today, and I'm going to start with a statistic. Now, this statistic is actually a couple of years old now, but so it's probably changed. About 1.4 million adults in the United States identified as transgender, double a widely used previous estimate. This is according to an analysis based on a new federal and state data. Of course, it's not new anymore. This was 2016. As the national debate escalates over the accommodations for transgender people, the new figure, though still at 0.6% of the adult population, is likely to raise questions about the sufficiency of services to support a population that may be larger than many policymakers assumed. So, I mean, think about that. It's 1.4 million. That's a lot of people. There's a saying, you don't count in policy circles until someone counts you, which I think is a pretty cool statement. Gary Gates, a demographer and former research director of the group that did this study, which is the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law. They are the ones who did the study that came up with this percentage. But he is a demographer and the former research director of the of this Williams Institute. And the Williams Institute focuses on law and policy issues related to sexual orientation and gender identity. I think that that is kind of a big deal. And having read this, I thought it was important to dedicate a show specifically to the unique medical treatment issues that affect the trans population. Honestly, there's a lot of stuff that I want to talk about as it relates to trans, and we're going to have other shows on it. But this show is in particular for those of you listeners who are of the trans community or thinking about becoming a member of the trans community, and what is involved in that, medically speaking. So we have a physician who is with us, who specializes in treating the trans population here in Atlanta, Dr. Joseph Smitty, or I guess I'll call you Joe. Say hello, Joe.
Hi there.
Okay, so we probably want you to get a lot closer to the mic. All right, so speak up and let's see if we can hear you.
Got it. How about this?
That's a little better. Okay. That's a little better. I'm still going to want you to talk louder, but you'll get there. All right, so that's cool. So Dr. Smitty has had a successful practice in internal medicine and HIV since 1996, and he has privileges at Piedmont Hospital, Atlanta Medical Center, and Crawford Long, which I don't think it's called Crawford Long anymore, is it?
No, it's Emory Midtown.
Emory Midtown. All right, and I'm still going to want you to speak. Let's see. I want you to scream, Dr.
Got
Smitty.
Got it. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, scream. Okay. So, and he was recognized in 2004 as one of Atlanta's top physicians by Southern Voice magazine. So that's kind of cool. And with him tonight is his nurse practitioner, who I am assuming you would not be able to do virtually anything without her at this point.
You got it.
But anyway, her name is Erin Everett. Say hello, Erin.
Hey there. How you doing?
Now that's what I'm talking about. Okay, that's good. All right. So Erin has been, you were actually born in Australia, correct?
That's right.
All right. And then moved to the States, Chicago initially. And then...
Yeah, I lived in Chicago. I moved to Chicago in 2001 and then Atlanta in 2009.
Okay. All right. Great. And you've been involved with the trans community for how long?
Just over 3 years.
Over 3 years. Oh, I hear the accent coming out a little bit. And Dr. Smitty, how long have you been involved with the trans population?
Well, 23 years here in Atlanta, and then before that as well.
All right. Okay. So the two of you are going to walk us through what it's like If you are somebody that considers themselves trans or experiencing gender dysphoria, and talk about what that means and what the road looks like. Really, I want you to paint that picture for us. But before we do that, we are going to go into what I like to call news of the queer, okay? Which I started with that, and then I thought, that sounds horrible. And so then I went with Queer News of the World, and I thought, no, I like News of the Queer. So this is News of the Queer. And we're going to start locally with a pretty horrific story that happened this happened about a year ago. So this happened to a transgendered woman. And I'm just going to describe you the scene. I don't have her name. This happened in March of 2018, but it's news now because she's suing over this. So she's a transgendered woman. She called the police after her car was damaged by a trash receptacle outside of a fast food restaurant. When the officer arrived, I guess she felt like she needed to have a police report or something in order to have the insurance pay for it. But when the officer, because I run into things all the time. I never call the police. Anyway. So when the officer arrived, he checked the license plate number and discovered that this woman or this transgendered person had a bench warrant in DeKalb County for failing to pay a $15 fine for a seatbelt violation. So she was arrested and transported to the Cobb County Jail. She told the arresting officer that she was transgendered. Castle has legally changed her gender in 2015, and her birth certificate and all other government-issued identification and records list her as female. Castle was also identified as female in the incident report and in the warrant, the original warrant from DeKalb County. So everybody sees her as a woman, legally and otherwise. She arrived at the jail wearing a dress, earrings, and a hair tie. The arresting officer was informed informed the jail staff that she was transgendered. So this is when the trouble began. When she was processed in the jail, she confirmed her legal name and gender with a jail staffer, and the identification she gave during this time said female. Castle was given, her name is Castle. I guess we do know her name. Wow, all right. Her last name anyway. Castle was given an inmate identification wristband listing her as female. So far, so good. But then an unknown male officer searched Castle by patting her down using his hands, according to the lawsuit. Castle objected and said asked if it was appropriate for a male officer to be patting her down. The officer responded, aren't you transgender? He then told her that, and I quote, she would be considered male while in jail and continued patting her down. He also referred to her using male pronouns. At some point, a jail staffer changed the records in the computer system to identify her as male. She was taken to a holding cell for other male detainees. Several inmates became riled up and aggressive towards Ms. Castle while overhearing a staffer tell her that she would be known in the jail as Mr. Castle. Each time Castle left her cell, male inmates nearby made sexually degrading, harassing, and abusive and threatening comments towards her. So she is suing. A number of people, I guess, with Cobb County, and is awaiting trial now. So I don't know. What do you think about that, guys?
Well, these are real daily issues that our patients experience. It's very challenging to identify as a gender and then have a different gender marker on your identification. Mm-hmm. And so it raises daily challenges for employment, education, legal issues. And so we see people who come to us and are discussing these challenges every day.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that you do. That was locally. Let's see what else here. Well, this is a popular one. I'm sure if you haven't heard about this, you need to. So this is international news, and this has a gender bent as well. So this is, today's April 2nd. Tomorrow will be April 3rd. Do you like how I was able to figure that out? But anyway, April 3rd is a very important day in the Kingdom of Brunei. Because that day, which is tomorrow, they will adopt strict laws regarding those who, first of all, being LGBT is considered illegal there, but the punishment for that will now, beginning tomorrow in Brunei, be death by stoning with an audience. So it will be a public stoning. I mean, here we are in 2019. It's just shocking to me that this is the case. And there's a transgendered woman named Zane who fled Brunei in late 2018 and is now seeking asylum in Canada. So this is horrific. George Clooney, amongst others, is asking for the banning of the Sultan. So basically, Brunei is a Muslim country, although 30% of the country is not Muslim. But they are slowly but surely adopting Sharia law. And this is by design. It's not like they're hiding this fact. They're wanting to have Sharia law. And the Sultan, who's in charge of this kingdom, his response to the outrage that we're hearing all across the world about this law regarding stoning for being gay or transgendered, the Sultan says that he does not expect other people to accept or agree with it, but it would suffice if they would respect the nation in the same way that his nation respects theirs. So I find that ironic that he's wanting to get respect. I don't know that what he's doing is very respectful at all. I just think that that's just, let's just agree to disagree. I'll stone gay people and you'll let them get married, but we'll just agree to disagree. Anyway, I think it's just horrific. All of that bad news, I thought I would give you something good. And that is, this is in Croatia on Saturday. So this happened, what is it, Tuesday? This happened 3 days ago. Drums, whistles, and banners were flying alongside blue, pink, and white flags. And they were all flying in Croatia's capital this weekend. The first ever Balkans Trans Intersex Pride took place in its host city of Zagreb. I have no idea if I said that right. On Saturday, around 300 demonstrators from all over the region joined in the march for trans rights. So that's in Croatia. So I think that's awesome. People carried banners reading "Change Your Hearts, Not My Parts." It's kind of clever. And that trans lives matter. So I think that's awesome. I think that's great. So anyway, and then the last thing I'll say, and then we're going to go to a quick break and then we'll start getting into the details. But the last thing I want to say, this is just for fun, a little news item here. So the legendary disco band, The Village People, will make a special appearance at Stockholm Pride next summer. Frontman Victor Willis will take the main stage at Pride Park on the 2nd of August 2019. The Village People's naval officer / policeman will perform with new band members and a live band, the organizers explained. So for those of you that are young and don't know anything about the Village People were formed in 1977 primarily as a disco act designed to appeal to gay men. The Village, now I didn't know this, the Village element of their name came from Greenwich Village, a New York neighborhood known for its gay population, so did not know that. With a number of timeless classics, such as In the Navy, Go West, Macho Man, and of course YMCA, the band has sold over 100 million records, which I think is, that's a lot. I think that's a lot. And without any further ado, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back from this break, it will be time to talk with Dr. Smitty. And do I call you Nurse Everett?
You could just call me Aaron.
Yeah, I'll just call you Aaron. About the medical, I guess, opportunities for the trans population. Thank you very much for listening. This is Alternative Perspectives.
Where can you begin to make your dreams all come? all of you Earth-loving kids and grown-ups out there. Please join us for a rousing round of Miss Ladybug's live-action video game, Pollination PlayStation, at WRFG's third annual Butterfly Tales. You can catch me, Miss Ladybug, at the Inman Park Festival, Saturday, April 27th at 5 p.m. and Sunday, April 28th at 4 p.m. on WRFG's Butterfly Tales stage inside the King of Pop's Little Gnome Zone. Miss Ladybug and Mr. Green Thumbs and WRFG's African Experience Worldwide own Toe Singer will also be performing at WRFG's Butterfly Tales alongside many performing acts. Stay tuned to WRFG, your station for progressive information and handpicked quality music, for more details about WRFG's Butterfly Tales.
All right, and we are back. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives. And for those of you that are just tuning in, I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with Dr. Joe Smitty and Aaron Everett, nurse practitioner, about the unique medical, I was going to call them issues, but I decided that sounds like a really negative term, like something that you have to fix. It's not really that, so I'm going to call them an opportunity. Medical opportunities. So Dr. Smitty, I want to start with you. And so I guess the first thing I want to do is, so you graduated medical school when?
In 1989.
And so originally, what kind of practice? He's not sure.
No, actually, I am not sure. It was okay. 1993. Thank you.
1993.
Yes.
Well, that's 4 years. Yeah.
Yes, it took me 4 years.
Yeah. Those were the... Oh, you started
in 89, thank
and
you.
Ended in 93. Yes. I thought that was 4 years. It was just like erased from your memory for some reason. It's a possibility when you're in college. But anyway, so tell me what your initial work was and how it led you to the trans community, I guess.
Well, of course, in the 80s, you know, we were focused on treating HIV. So through college, medical school, and even residency, my focus was trying to keep people alive and treat HIV. And then in 96, Good Meds came out, and then I came to Atlanta in 96 and took over a practice that was LGBT focused. And then as part of that practice, there were some transgender patients in the practice. So kind of like a lot of what we do in medicine, you know, you learn by practicing. And so a lot of what I learned actually came from the patients.
Right. People don't want to know that, do they? But
it's the absolute truth.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, it is true. The patients have taught me everything I know, especially about transgender medicine, because that is not something that, at least at the time, there was no instruction in medical school or residency about any gay or transgender issue.
So, and just to, for the audience, just to make clear, so you are not doing reassignment surgery, correct?
No, we treat patients medically.
And, well, surgery, okay. Yeah, okay.
With medication and hormones, yes.
Okay, and so just for my understanding, is it a urologist that does that surgery usually?
So
gender reassignment surgery?
There are actually surgeons who specialize in gender reassignment.
Okay. And this has always been curious to me. Do they usually specialize going from one to the other? Like I'm good at men to women, but not women to men? It's okay if you don't know.
Yeah, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I think that most of the surgeons do either female to male surgery or male to female surgery.
I would think so.
Yeah, the surgeons, I don't think, do both.
Okay. No. And so you see these patients. Well, anyway, just continuing with kind of your history. So when you first started, you just had a few patients.
That's correct.
And then at some point, I guess it started growing for you. Is this something that happened just organically, or did you decide you wanted to do this more?
Well, there was absolutely a need, of course, so that was part of it. And then I decided again to focus my practice on LGBT issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so the needs have changed over the years. I mean, at first, the patients I was seeing were almost exclusively male to female transgender patients. And since then, that's changed dramatically. And now it's the majority of our patients are female to male transgender.
Really?
Yes.
I wonder why that is. Do you have any ideas?
I'm sure you could write a thesis or spend 5 hours talking about why that is. I don't. I have a few guesses, but...
Well, give me a guess.
Well, it's just become much more of something that's, you know, discussed, and it's an option. I mean, again, we're talking about 25 years ago, and it just didn't really exist. I mean, a woman going to a doctor to get testosterone treatment was not, at least in Atlanta, something that was happening.
Yeah, no, I guess... Like with anything else, when it comes to medicine and even this kind of medicine, I guess men are first in line.
Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I think that may be, well, we'll just assume that that's the reason for sure.
Yes.
We can bank on it. Again, this is our opinion. So anyway, so just to take this a little further, so how many people are in your practice right now how many transgendered people are you?
You know, Aaron, this is not something that we actually keep statistics on.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I would say hundreds, but I don't know, 300 or 400. Aaron, do you have a guess?
Yeah, I would guess 300 or 400.
I mean,
both of us see several transgender patients per day. So... Yeah.
What percentage of the practice is it then? I guess I'm asking the same question in another way.
It does vary day to day, but I mean, I would say it's 10%.
Yeah, maybe even
could
more.
I don't 20% know. Some days.
But there's more that are female to male than male to female these days. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say the female to male definitely outweighs out male to female population at this point.
That's interesting.
But
I think that's really interesting. And the next thing I did want to kind of go over this, because I think there's some real confusion around what a transgendered person is as opposed to a transvestite or a transsexual. I looked up the definition of a transgendered person, and according to this, transgender is it's an encompassing term of many gender identities of those who do not identify or exclusively identify with their sex assignment at birth. Mm-hmm. So a transgendered person is somebody that does not identify with the sex that they were assigned at birth. So it's an interesting way that they say that. The sex they were assigned. This isn't necessarily the sex that they naturally are, but actually there's a decision made, right, when you're born as to whether or not you're a man or a woman, based on your genitals or genitalia. But the reason why I think it's important to focus on the word assigned is because there are people that it's not obvious. You know, I believe sometimes are they still called hermaphrodites or
intersex?
Yes. So, and from what I understand, it used to be if anybody was, this was, you know, years ago, I don't know if they're still doing this or not, but if somebody was born and it wasn't obvious as to whether or not they were male or female, whatever it was that was hanging off of them was just cut off and then they were a female. I think that's how they addressed it years ago. But now, thankfully, hopefully that's not the case. But so this is assigned and written on the birth certificate. But the other point I want to make about it is that a transgendered person, it has everything to do with whether or not they feel as though they are a man or a woman. It has nothing to do with their sexual orientation.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then I think did you have something you were going to add about definitions? I mean, what is a transvestite, a transsexual versus a transgendered?
Well, I think it's an important distinction because there's several different ways. And obviously, when you're talking about male and female, you also talk about binary identification. So not everybody is binary. So there are some people, you know, we kind of look at gender as a spectrum and people fall within the spectrum. There are definitely a lot of individuals that we treat that identify as non-binary. And then within that, there's transmasculine and transfeminine. So perhaps they consider themselves non-binary, but also present a little bit more masculine or a little bit more feminine, but still prefer to be using pronouns like they, them, and theirs. And then as far as transvestite, really anyone working in the field doesn't really use that word anymore. It's considered, you know, outdated. You would consider maybe someone as a cross-dresser. Most of the time, those people are doing that for, you know, as a hobby, maybe even for sexual arousal, sexual pleasure, which obviously transgendered individuals are not deciding to change their gender based on those types of reasons. And so that's an important distinction, because often in the lay community, those things can be misinterpreted and be considered offensive to patients. So, but yeah, there's definitely a gender spectrum, and you know, we really try to cater towards that with our patients too. And I think the community appreciates that.
Is there a difference between someone? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, can you consider yourself transgendered but opt not for sex reassignment surgery?
Of course. And I would say the majority of our patients don't go on to have reassignment surgery.
Okay.
Full
okay.
reassignment surgery, I should say.
Okay. So there's, that's kind of like the biggest change that you can make. I guess, you know.
Well, I mean, it all depends. I mean, when it comes down to trying to get a marker changed on an ID, that's considered, gender reassignment surgery is considered total and complete transition. However, you know, getting a mastectomy to remove the breasts on a trans man is often the extent of what people go to, because the phalloplasty surgery options just aren't awesome, and mm-hmm. also they're expensive. And unfortunately, like Dr. Smitty was referencing earlier, there's a lot of social issues with the community in general, as far as like being able to procure jobs that give them good income and things like that. So it can make those types of surgeries out of reach.
Okay. So I would imagine that, I mean, part of your job was a patient presents and they tell you that they consider themselves, they don't feel comfortable. They feel like they're in the wrong body, basically, is what mm-hmm. they're saying. But then that doesn't just automatically mean they're going to get surgery. Then there's a lot of education that I guess has to take place. Like, what are my options? You know, what is it that I feel comfortable with? And that's some of what I want to talk about mm-hmm. In the next section. But is that kind of what happens, I would imagine?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a process. Mm-hmm.
You to save it until after we get okay. back. I just want to make sure that I'm hitting on the right movement there. But mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So for those of you that are just listening, this is Alternative Perspectives. I'm Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with Dr. Joe Smitty and Aaron Everett about the unique medical unique medical opportunities that affect the trans population. So we will be right back after this quick break. WRFG Atlanta on your dial, and hang on, because, well, you know, things are going to get very exciting here in a moment. They always do. And thanks for listening. WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 on your dial.
Remember those
And we are back. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives. I am Greg Bossen, and we are all about the transgender community tonight. And in general, we are talking with Dr. Joe Smitty and Aaron Everett, his right-hand woman and nurse practitioner, about the unique medical opportunities affecting the trans population. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to get into the nitty-gritty. So, Aaron, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So I am a 18-year-old girl. I have biological female, but I am interested. I don't feel right in my body. I haven't felt right in my body. My family is not supportive of this, or maybe they don't even know, but I'm interested in possibly getting some help. And I've been able to, I have a job, I have enough insurance to where I'm able to make an appointment. So I make an appointment. Is that what happens? I just call and make an appointment out of nowhere? Do I need to be referred?
So I would say the majority of the time when patients land in our lab and make an appointment, they've already gone through the process of maybe or maybe not seeing a therapist, but they're at the point where they're ready for hormones. Rarely do people come to us and say, well, I think I'm having some dysphoria. I'm not entirely sure. But every now and then that happens, and certainly even recently that's happened. And when that does happen, I usually refer them over to a local gender therapist. We have quite a few really good ones in Atlanta, just to help kind of vet them out and decide, you know, get them to the point where they can talk about everything and determine if they're ready for hormones or not. You know, we definitely counsel our patients because that's just part of the job, but that's not our specialty. So we definitely want to connect people with good, qualified mental health care providers. But when patients do call to make an appointment and they've already kind of made the decision that, you know, I'm biological female, I identify as male, and I'm ready for hormones, or vice versa, you know, they make the appointment. And let me just emphasize that, especially at our practice, Dr. Smitty has allowed it, and so that patients don't have to have insurance. Like, the prices are for self-pay are quite affordable, especially in comparison to other local practices. So
is that for the treatment or the hormones or both?
Both. Oh, wow. Both for visits. You know, the hormones, obviously we don't name the price on that, but there's a lot of discount programs that we guide our patients to, and they can get the hormones for very cheap. But as far as labs, you know, he's able to pass on the savings there too. So cost is usually not a big barrier when it comes to uninsured.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. That's nice to know. So assuming that I'm ready for hormone treatment. Now, that is a question. If I come in and say I'm ready for hormone treatment, but I haven't gotten, I mean, do you get a note from a therapist or
something? Well, a lot of local practices do require that. However, we don't. We do informed consent, which, you know, a lot of people ask what that is. And basically, that's just the provider sitting down with you, going over the risks and benefits of hormones and the expected time frame for physical changes and kind of what it all looks like. And then, you know, we get a witness to their signature, which, you know, the witness is not witnessing their comprehension of the consent, but rather that they're the ones that signed it and I didn't make them sign it. And, you know, but it's just a way to reduce barriers to care.
Okay. So, and I'm just wondering, it's kind of surprising to me that there's not some sort of law that requires you to get some sort of letter from some other state therapist or something like that. But is there any sort of a move afoot? I hope not, to make that happen. And no one's ever said anything about that.
No. Or? And in fact, there's a couple of like governing boards, so to speak, that we look to for guidelines. And one of them is the World Professional Association of Transgender Healthcare, or WPATH. And they have explicitly stated as well, you know, while they recommend people have a mental health care provider, a letter should not be required. And then the endocrinology guidelines also just got updated, I think, 18 months ago. And they also recommend a mental health care provider, but they don't say that it should be required. Because also what people have to realize is the suicide rates, the rates of depression and anxiety amongst transgendered individuals is quite high.
Yes.
And putting up another barrier can really, you know...
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah,
that hurts. So, just last question in this arena, because I know there'll be people wondering about this. So, if you go on hormone therapy, and that's basically what we're talking about here, we're talking
Correct.
About hormone therapy,
hormone replacement therapy,
hormone replacement therapy, and then at some point you decide you no longer want to do that.
Yeah.
What happens? Are the effects unchangeable? This is what somebody that would be right. like, oh, you better get, you know, what do you think about that? I'm pushing
it,
I know.
No, you're not pushing it, because okay. if you're thinking it, other people are too.
Yeah.
But a lot of the changes actually are reversible. Uh-huh. However, I mean, I've never had anybody want to change. I know Dr. Smitty's been doing it a lot longer.
I think I can only think of one person in the past 23 years who, you know, at some point into the treatment said, well, I'm not sure. And so, you know, the patients who we're seeing, they're not indecisive about their gender.
Right.
This is just something that, again, is something that's inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that and really, these are the most decisive, happiest patients of all of my patients.
Yeah, that was something that really floored me. Yeah, that mm-hmm. you were saying that they're of most patients come in because they're complaining of something. This is a dream come true for people.
This is a right. dream come true. Absolutely.
Yeah. And people yeah. travel far and wide, because unfortunately there's like a lack of providers doing this type of care. But, you know, we have patients coming across state borders to get care.
Oh, I would think. Well, this anywhere in the Southeast, I would imagine, this right. is probably a mecca mm-hmm. for sure. So so I go to this appointment and I do the signed consent. And then is there some sort of a physical? There's probably a baseline physical that happens first.
Of course. Yeah, we assess the patient, make sure that they're medically well enough for hormones. I mean,
well enough for hormones and
most
who
people.
Isn't?
I mean, honestly, most people. It's very hard to not be medically.
Is an HIV positive person?
Of course.
Absolutely. These are natural, normal hormones
okay.
that, you know, the body is just not making enough of.
So what are the hormones?
We're adjusting their hormones. Well, the hormones are basically estrogen and testosterone.
Okay.
Depending on okay, which, so who you're treating.
Okay, this is where I'm skinning my ignorance here. But, is just like that's your two choices? Or is there like different grades of each one? Or like I don't really understand that kind of stuff. So
well, those are your two choices for hormones. But as referring back to the gender spectrum uh-huh. with non-binary folk, we definitely low dose them
okay.
because you know, they might have dysphoria of their voice, so we'll give them a smaller dose of testosterone to deepen their voice a little bit, which is irreversible. But you know, they don't want to have a full transition, so we're going to give them a very low dose, not a traditional transitional dose of
okay.
testosterone.
And is this yeah. in pill form?
Testosterone is injectable. Estradiol or estrogen is oral pills, yeah.
Okay, and this is like one pill a day or?
Estrogen is dosed multiple times a day. The testosterone is typically injected once a week into the muscle. Just depends on where they're at and what their blood work says and what kind of transition they're looking for. You know, we have very individualized care plans when it comes to our patients.
Okay, so that's what I'm wondering. So is there some sort of like, okay, when you are where you want to be, what does that look like? I guess is what you would need to ask them, or how does that work?
Well, I mean,
tell me what the estrogen does in particular, the specifics, like how does it change the body? And then we'll do the testosterone.
Well, you have to block the natural testosterone production in the testicles. So
okay.
you do that with an androgen blocker like spironolactone. And while that's being blocked, then you can increase the estradiol levels. And, you know, hormones, let's be face, it's kind of a crapshoot when you're testing them on the blood, so you just use it as kind of a guideline. But you're also looking to the patient for subjective changes and then also the, you know, the changes that you see as a provider, like breast development and things like that. But the estrogen, once you've suppressed the testosterone, it allows the estrogen to increase enough to like basically shut off the pituitary hormones and stop the production of the testosterone. And that's when you're going to start seeing things like breast development, fat redistribution, decrease in spontaneous erections, changes in semen, which can then, of course, and will eventually, of course, cause infertility because you need testosterone to make sperm. So there's lots of different changes like that. The feminizing process can often be slower, especially if started later in life.
How long does this take, actually?
I mean, we tell patients a total transition is like 3 to 5 years, where you're going to be seeing gradual changes and changes in bone structure and fat and muscle mass. And those types of things.
What other things do they need to be doing while they're on this treatment to stay healthy? I guess they need to keep coming in.
Right.
How often do they need to see you?
We monitor our patients every 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
You know, anytime we're prescribing medicines, we like to see patients at least every 6 months because you need to be checking in on them and making sure they're doing well. But I mean, hormone treatment is not a short-term thing. You're going to be on hormones forever if you, as long as you want to maintain your feminist, your feminizing effects or your masculinizing effects. Some of them are irreversible, but you're replacing the dominant hormone to match their gender identity. So that's the hormone they'll be on.
Okay. And if, so I didn't know this. So they're on it the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Even if they have gender reassignment surgery?
Yeah, you might modify it a little bit, but yeah, you still need a dominating hormone for bone health, cardiovascular health, all okay. the other metabolic issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is there something else that they need to do during this time or while they're on it? Like, it just changes their body, but it's not as if there's some other aspect, you know, take extra vitamins or do no. this. Is there side effects to estrogen that they need to look at and maybe try and counter?
Yeah, I mean, all medications have side effects.
Right.
One of the things that we counsel probably most heavily on is the slight increased risk of blood clot with estrogen. Mm-hmm. And that's true for biological females taking oral birth control. We
of course.
Counsel them as well, you know. So we definitely don't want them to be smoking cigarettes. Are we not going to, you know, prescribe the medications? Yeah, but we're still going to continually counsel and hopefully, you know, there's a lot of polysubstance abuse in the LGBT community in general. So we're always counseling on those types of things. But there's nothing specific that they could be doing to expedite their transition. All the rest of the counseling is going to be just like if you walked into my office and I can identify lifestyle modifications for you too.
Okay.
It's not really going to be much different.
So this isn't that scary in a way. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to either a pill or a shot. Now, do you want to talk about the testosterone aspect? So then if I'm going in the opposite direction, I'm going from a woman to a man, I'm just increasing testosterone or am I trying to decrease?
So we don't have to actually block. Testosterone is a really powerful hormone. So that's why often you'll see trans men having a faster transition. It's a lot easier to shut down the ovaries and their natural production of the feminizing hormone. So no, we don't have to block those. Once we start doing the injections, you know, I do describe to my patients as kind of like menopause and puberty all rolled into one. So they'll have the effects of like low estrogen in the vaginal area that I counsel them on that could be just, you know, uncomfortable, but also they're mostly excited about the other things, like their period is going to stop and their voice is going to deepen and they're going to have increased hair growth. And usually a lot of those changes happen within the first 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty quick. But again, it's a 3 to 5 year process. So they'll continue to notice gradual changes, like changes in their hairline and facial hair takes longer to develop, which I'm sure everybody, you know, most people want that to happen right away. But it's just, I try to reflect back on any biological male going through puberty. Facial hair takes the longest to develop, but yeah.
Right. All right. And so does that mean that after 3 to 5 years are up, so it feels like there's this transition that takes place and then they get to a point and then that's good. They're happy. But they still need, can they decrease the drug over time or?
Well, you know, again, it all based on their blood work. So often, you know, we usually start patients on 100 milligrams per week of testosterone. And then I really like to check their levels 5 days after an injection. And at that time, like the general guideline, you know, I'm kind of looking for it to be like between 300 and 500. And basically that's telling me that they're staying therapeutic towards the end of the week so that their estrogen isn't spiking and that their ovaries aren't kind of, quote, fighting back. And that will help them have less mood swings and less fluctuations and abdominal pain and things like that from their uterus. So now to answer your question about like after 3 to 5 years, once they're on a steady dose and every time I check it, it's about the same, we leave it where it's at. There's no reason to go up or down.
Right.
And if you go down, they might have their period come back and that's very distressing.
Okay. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break here for a promo, and then we'll be right back. Thank you very much. We are talking with Dr. Jo Smitty and her wonderful nurse practitioner, Erin Everett. We'll be right back in one quick second.
Hi, this is John from WRFG's Route 66. Your Sunday morning cruise for the blues, jump, R&B, boogie-woogie, early rock and roll, and jukebox jazz. Frankie Lee and I want to invite you to our very first ever Chumpin' with Route 66 party. It's Sunday, April 7th at Blind Willie's Blues Club. Check out the lineup straight from Savannah, harmonica master Kyle Yardley, plus Tommy Macon and the Gentlemen of Jazz, Native Sons, Ray and the Royal Peacocks, the Atlanta Horns, Sandra Hall, Ron Cooley and the Hard Times Band, Frankie's Blues Mission, and a round robin tribute to the King of the Jukebox, Louis Jordan. Please join us at Blind Willie's on Sunday, April 7th for WRFG's Jumpin' with Roots 66. The doors will open at 2 p.m., the music will start at 3, and we won't stop until 9:30. Admission is a donation of $10 or more at the door. You do have to be 21 or older to get in. Blind Willie's Blues Club is located at 828 North Highland Avenue Northeast, Atlanta, 30306. All proceeds benefit WRFG 89.3 FM, your independent community radio station for progressive information and handpicked quality music. And join us Sunday morning from 7 to 9 for a caffeinated cruise down the Rhythm and Blues Highway, Route 66. You can listen worldwide over our free mobile app and our website, WRFG.org.
All right, and we are back. For those of you that are just listening, you're listening to Alternative Perspectives. I'm Greg Bossen, your host, and we are speaking with Dr. Joe Smitty and Aaron Everett about the unique medical opportunities that are available to the trans population. So Dr. Smitty, now here's a question that's some people might find it a little what do I want to say? It's never good when you can't remember the word you want to say when you're on the radio. But if you realize that you're not perfect, it's okay. Controversial, I guess. I don't know. But it did occur to me. So if I am a woman, if I'm a man and I'm deciding that I want to be a woman, I go on estrogen and then I have a little bit of a blocker for the testosterone. And when you said that you don't have as many erections, eventually, I guess... Does that mean we don't orgasm anymore? Is that the case? If you are a man going to a woman, but you don't, does that mean there's no more orgasm? Is there no more sexual arousal? Like, what is that?
Sexual arousal and orgasm is still possible. Again, the sexual identity and gender identity, of course, sexual preference and sexual attraction are very different things.
Right.
And so our patients who come in are most focused on their gender identity and their transition. And so, when we are prescribing hormones and helping them go through the process and counseling, that's really the main focus. There are patients who have sexual side effects from hormones who we then have to kind of coach through that, or again, it's a matter of either adjusting hormone levels or something else. But those issues do come up at times.
Are you saying that I'm transitioning to a woman and I'm taking estrogen, I can still masturbate to orgasm?
Yes.
It's more difficult, I would imagine, though, correct?
It's going to depend on hormone levels and desire and a lot of those things. But for most of those male to female patients, their testosterone levels are extremely low. So the number of erections, the strength of erections, sexual desire, the amount of ejaculate, all of those things are going to change.
Okay. And from what I'm hearing, these things are not the most important in their life.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. When you feel like you're in a body that's not your body, that wasn't meant for you, that's got to be like prison, I would imagine. I could totally see that. Some of these questions are be a little bit, it's just something that I wonder. So if somebody does have reassignment surgery, they still need to come to you before and after.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. And so, and again, forgive me, but I just don't know this.
Sure.
So if I'm a man and I transition into a woman and we go through that surgery, can I have sex using that part of my body, I guess?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. I won't go any further.
Okay.
Than that.
I'm willing to go further, and Aaron's definitely ready.
Well, then tell
further.
Me a little bit more about that, because is there a hole, and then you can still put your penis in it? I mean, we can,
yeah.
As long as we're not inappropriate.
I mean, depending on the, no, it's not inappropriate at all. These people, this is answers that people want.
Yeah.
And it's very factual. I mean, when they build out the neovagina, it's built with a clitoris, which is usually innervated by the glands previous gland's penis, which is the tip of the penis.
An artificial clitoris. Oh, no, they create it from...
create it from their own flesh.
Nice.
And then also with a labia. And then, you know, there's two different types of vaginoplasty, but the most popular is the full depth where you can have penetrative intercourse. And they usually try and line up the canal with the prostate. So people can actually orgasm through vaginal intercourse post-surgery.
Okay.
If all done, right. If done well.
Now, in the other direction then... a woman who's becoming a man. What is that surgery? What is it that they're doing there to create a penis? Do they create a penis?
Yes, they do create a penis. I would say that, you know, again, the majority of my patients who are female to male transgender really are not interested in phalloplasty. The surgical techniques have changed and improved over the years. But it can be and is a very involved stepwise surgical procedure. So it's the phallus is created usually through several stage surgery.
Oh, wow. So how many people have gone through that with you?
In my practice in 23 years, I've only had two patients go through phalloplasty.
Okay. So most women going to men, they do everything else, but... they leave that area alone.
That's correct. Now, you know, part of that, again, it's very individualized, mm-hmm. and a lot of it has to do, again, with cost and availability of surgeons. And my patients who've had the surgery have had to leave Atlanta because there is no one in Atlanta doing that surgery.
I'm sure. Oh, so, really? There's no one? Okay.
No. I think both of those patients actually may have... gotten their insurance to pay for it, however. So this is something that is improving over time, insurance coverage for gender reassignment surgery.
Now, and continuing on with our orgasm questions, so, and I know nothing about female orgasms, I could promise you that. I've not had one, nor have I caused anyone else to have one.
Okay.
But anyway, so if you have a woman who takes testosterone, does that affect her ability to have an orgasm or his ability to have an orgasm?
Usually they have a major increase in libido because usually within the first 6 to 12 months, you'll have enlargement of the clitoris. So
testosterone,
and that's called in like on the colloquial terms is bottom growth is what people refer to it as. And sometimes that's quite enough for people to not want to go on and have surgery.
So it sounds like if you are becoming a man, your sex drive goes up. But if you're becoming a woman, your sex drive goes down.
Right. Because sex drive has a lot to do with testosterone.
On either side. I didn't know that. Does that mean that women have testosterone, a certain amount of testosterone?
Yep, that's correct.
I did not know that. See, this is just so cool. Okay. Yeah. Now, I know that if you have a lot of testosterone, you tend to lose your hair. I thought you'd lose your hair. So is that one of the side effects?
That is one of the side effects, yeah, that we talk to our patients about is potential hair loss, male pattern hair loss.
Okay, yeah. Which I never really understood that. You know, you take testosterone if you're a man because you want to have more sex. But if you lose your hair... then the chances of you having more sex may go down.
I don't know.
It depends upon the shape
depends
of your
you
head.
Ask. Right.
I'll probably get a call on that one. Anyway. Well, all right. Well, I think that's pretty much it. Oh, I did want to end by I asked you, I know it was last minute, but to those of you that are listening that are interested, where might they go to find more resources on that? And you can hand that to me and I'll read it if you would like. They're passing the paper back and forth to each other probably.
Well, there's a lot of resources, but this one is great. I think it's really easy to read.
So it's called the Center for Excellence for Transgender Health. And so basically what you do is you go to the web and you go to transhealth.ucsf.edu. And I'll say it again. You go to transhealth.ucsf.edu. CSF.edu. And there you can find out more about it. And also, I assume you can go to your site. What is your website?
Absolutely. There are so many local resources. Again, local gender therapists, local physicians, and support groups. And really, there's a lot of local resources in a city the size of Atlanta. And like Aaron said, yeah, we have people every week who come across state lines to see us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our website is actually, Aaron, what's your website? Your website's better than mine.
Oh, Lord. AaronEverettNP.com.
That is a really great website, Adrian.
It's fantastic once you go there. Yes.
Well, thank you, Mutt. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Alternative Perspectives. And both of you, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for devoting the time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, and there'll be more.
We can talk about it all night.
There'll be more. You know, there's a real issue in the gay community. There's a lot of transphobia within the gay community that I've encountered. People that don't feel like they want trans part of who they are. Like they don't want it as one of the letters of LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this the other night. But anyway, we will talk about that on another show. Thank you very much for listening. And next up, we have
Peach State Festival.
You know, you guys always change it around on me, so I get really confused. But then again, I get confused anyway. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Alternative Perspectives. Don't forget to tune in next week. And until then, I don't know. Find somebody you love and tell them that you love them. Bye.